Good morning. Welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your viewership at the Eastman Financial Report. We also appreciate your viewership of WVW-TV. As you know, we've been broadcasting at WVW-TV for quite some time. I think 2006 is the kickoff. And we bring to the marketplace of ideas some very important programming and some thoughts and ideas, and that information is available to you 24 hours a day, not only during our live broadcast, but also in the middle of the night. If you'd like to watch the reruns or you missed the show, you can certainly click on the videos at 2 in the morning. The point is, we're here 24 hours a day to bring very high quality content and opinion and thoughts to the great marketplace of ideas. And of course, that's all enshrined in the First Amendment to our United States Constitution, which is our precious freedom of speech, our ability to communicate our ideas and contribute thoughts and ideas to that great marketplace of ideas, and bring our opinions to the foray for popular consideration. So thank you so much for tuning in, and of course, if you are a frequent viewer of WVW-TV, might behoove you to give contact the WVW Foundation at wvwfoundation.com and consider making a contribution, because as you know, we are not a commercial network. We don't sell advertising to keep the lights on. We rely on the generous donations of viewers and sponsors and friends to keep this information flowing. And we're really appreciative of all the people who take the time to do that. So if you're looking for a place to donate, you can go to the wvwfoundation.com and make a donation and help us continue this ministry. We also have sponsors for not only the network, but programs. And of course, my sponsor for this program is Swiss America Trading, which is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. Swiss America Trading is an American company based in Arizona, and they are expert in the marketing of precious metals. So if you're looking to buy precious metals to add to your portfolio for inflation protection or whatever reason, give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271. And tell them Dan Eastman from the Eastman Financial Report sent you, and they'd be happy to send you some free information and explain in more detail how precious metals and the precious metals markets work. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you will be able to see the products that they have available and also any specials that they're running, and they'll also be happy to send you free information. You know, in this turbulent time, of economic time and political time, people are thinking about how do you best protect your earning power and your buying power. And one of the ways to do that, of course, is diversify your asset holdings into a number of different pockets that will benefit from inflation. And that's where precious metals come in. They have been traditionally, for thousands of years, not only a hedge against inflation, but also a store of value. And it's something that if you're considering precious metals, you want to give Swiss America a call or reach out to them at SwissAmerica.com. Because when you enter into that space, like any investment space, you want to find a strong and reliable partner that knows what they're doing, they're honest, they have a great track record. And Swiss America has been in this business a very long time. The people are experts, they're professionals, this is their day job, this is what they do. And if you're going to take some of your precious Federal Reserve notes or digital Federal Reserve money and convert it into precious metals, you'll want to deal with a vendor and a partner that has experience and a great track record, a great reputation in the industry. You can buy gold and silver online all day long. You can buy it, in certain big retail operations. But at the end of the day, if you're going to part with your money, you might want to be buying it from somebody who understands and can explain and is there when you need it. And the quality and quantity of your purchase is very important. And that's what Swiss America is an expert at. If you buy a 1 ounce gold coin, you expect it to be 1 ounce of pure gold. Well, gold is always refined to like 0.999 something of purity. But when you purchase tangible metals, you want to make sure you're getting what you paid for. And that's where Swiss America will be there for you. They can explain all of it. And just so give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to SwissAmerica.com and reach out. They'll be more than happy to answer your questions. It's not a high pressure operation. These are professional people. So if you're thinking about that, you should reach out. You know, I was also talking yesterday about the gift giving season. We've just come through the holiday gift giving season, and people took advantage of a special that Swiss America was running, and they bought some silver coins to give out to nieces and nephews and grandkids. And it's a teachable moment when you give somebody a precious metal coin, because what you can do with that is spend a little time teaching people and explaining that this is what money used to look like, and this is what real money is. It's precious metals, and it's precious because people around the globe are more than happy to have that, and that's why it has value. And of course, we think about birthday season coming up, and graduations will be here before, as soon as the snow melts, we'll have graduations. And again, this is an opportunity to not only give somebody the gift of something precious that they will appreciate and put in the sock drawer and preserve, rather than use and throw into a dumpster and into the landfill it goes. So think about that. You know, it's not only the inflation, but it's also an opportunity to instruct and instruct the young generation in the way they should go. So anyway, reach out to Swiss America. They're great people. 1-800-519-6271. Well, let's jump into the news today, of course, and being almost now the end of January, hard to believe how quickly time passes. The economy and economic news will continue to take center stage as we're in an election year. This is, of course, unless you've perhaps just gotten off a spaceship from Mars, you realize this is the 2024 is a presidential election year, and it will be quite an election. We're seeing early primary results. And of course, this is not a political show. I don't report on political things. But what we're seeing is it's going to be looking, at least at this early juncture, like a rematch. And what that tells you is there will be all sorts of pressure, economic pressure, because the incumbent will want to paint a rosy picture of a beautiful economy where Americans are skipping through fields of tulips in economic bliss. And of course, the challenger will want to say the economy stinks and we've got to do something to fix it. And of course, you are going to see a lot of competing information. And the purpose of this show, of course, is to develop critical thinking skills. This is why I took my classroom lectures and I said, let's put these lectures on TV so that people can tune in and watch, and you don't have to go off to some fancy college. You can just tune in and listen to me at 2 a.m. the reruns, and you'll hear the same thing. But the idea is critical thinking. We want to look at these news stories, and we want to read between the lines, and we want to understand what is the motivation, because people don't just put stuff out on the news randomly. Every bit of news goes through an editorial process, and there's an agenda. Every last piece of news is an agenda, except perhaps this, but I'm not really a collector of news. I'm a commentator on news, and I don't have an agenda other than teaching you to learn critical thinking skills so that when you see headlines, you don't just react. You think about it and say, why am I reading that? Who put it out? Why am I reading it? What does it mean? What is the agenda? And, you know, how accurate is this information? And what is this all about? You can't just say, oh, look, unemployment is down. No, you have to think about what that means. And that's the purpose of this program. And I do thank you for tuning in for almost a year now to allow me to at least give you my opinions and hopefully help you see through some of these economic stories. So let's take one example today, the credit card spending report. There was a report that came out, and it is showing that currently Americans are spending at about $2.5 trillion on credit cards. And that's a lot of credit card spending. And of course, when you think about that from a superficial level, or at least a snapshot level, you think, wow, people, you know, they're not using cash, they're using credit cards. But when you look at the way the American economy has, I don't like the word evolved, but let's see how it has continued to morph forward. You will realize that fewer and fewer people pay with cash, which means Federal Reserve notes or Federal Treasury coin, and debit cards are still a thing, and very few people are writing paper checks to do commerce. And, you know, I know it happens all over the country. People write checks at the grocery store. That's fine. But when you look at how people spend, more and more people are spending on credit cards because it's very easy. It's digital money. You pull the card out, you buy your groceries, you pay for it, and you leave. And then the question becomes, with the $2.5 trillion in spending, how much of that remains on the card as a revolving debt, and how much is paid off? And of course, if you dig deeper into the story, it was interesting to see that there's about $550 billion that is rolled over debt that has not been paid off, that at, you know, at 18% to 29%, whatever the credit card interest rate is. But it tells you that that is a very high balance of credit card expenditure that was not paid off and continues to be a liability burden for consumers. And of course, when you're paying 18 to 29% interest or whatever the number is on $550 billion, that's quite a drag on the economy. And what it tells you is people can't just charge something and pay it off, just like you could use a digital pay system and it would come right out of your checking account. Like if you pay on your cell phone, you know, you can go into the coffee shop and pay amazingly with your cell phone, or you can use a debit card or a prepaid card or a credit card. And the fact is that the credit cards are handed out very, very generously to the American population, and people have come to find the convenience of using credit cards to be significant, so they tend to use credit cards. And the question is, can you overspend? And the answer is, well, to the tune of $550 billion, there is overspending. Now, that's not to say a person can't use a credit card for an emergency situation, and you're probably very thankful to have a line of credit, even though it's an expensive line of credit. But the fact is, those numbers are watched carefully by economists and financial people, because you want to look at the debt load and debt impact on the American consuming base, which, again, another word I don't like. I don't like evolution. I don't like being called a consumer. I tend to think human beings have more worth than being consumer units. And of course, in the financial and economic world, perhaps we are consumers, but we're first and foremost human beings who happen to consume. And that's why when you look at that type of data from the perspective of economics and finance, you realize that, you know, there's statistical value in knowing where the consumer is in America, but the idea isn't just to earn income and consume at all. I mean, there's more to life. And I think that's, Americans are paying attention to that more as we're coming, you know, into a slower economic cycle. But at the end of the day, what you're seeing is that there's still a whole lot of credit being held on credit cards at very high interest. Of course, if you're an issuer of credit cards, that's a good thing. I mean, that's their business. You know, you give somebody a line of credit basically by filling out a credit app, you know, a credit card application, and then they take a look at your score, and they give you a line of credit of a certain amount, however much credit they've extended. And the idea is they want you to charge and then not pay off the balance and then pay 18 to 29% on the balance you carry. And that's their business. That's the business model. And of course, the risk to that, to them, is, well, they've given credit to somebody who's maybe has more credit than they should have and will go into default. And how many people are behind on their credit card payments? And it's interesting. I looked at that number actually yesterday, and it's really like about 3.5%. You'd think it would be much higher, but people have an instinctive understanding that if you lose your credit card, your life is going to be a lot less robust because you don't have that flexibility to do consumer spending. So it's a dance. But the thing is, at the end of the day, $550 billion in you know, revolving credit is still outstanding. And that's a lot of money in this economy. So, okay, I want to move on to the next thing. There was one I wanted to talk about yesterday, and we ran out of time. And I think I'm going to do that right now. I was talking about this idea of how our federal government is designed with respect to its fiscal operations. And as we all know, as taxpayers, we're not only consumers, but we're taxpayers. Our job is to make money and pay taxes and spend the rest. And that's kind of the way, you know, the world shakes out in, you know, the great American experiment, which is my three silos. You have the poor, and then you have the middle class, and then you have the wealthy, who by now have all escaped the gravitational pull of the economy. But at the end of the day, that's the way the model works. And if you go back to the more classical view of an economy, which is my ball of economic economic activity, our gross domestic product or our national income. It's all of the transactions that individuals and businesses and nonprofits and all of the commercial activity, all of the business transactions is our national economy or our GDP, gross domestic product. And at the end of the day, that is the universe of the economy. And within that universe, of course, we have the banking system, which is to take people who have surplus and act as an intermediary. And, they'll borrow it from the surplus holders and pay interest to the surplus holder, and then they'll lend it to people who need capital. And that has an ability to grow the economy through a leveraging model. It's kind of it's an interesting thing. And when you talk about fractional banking, the 10 to 1, you put a dollar in the bank and the bank lends $10, where'd those 9 come from? Well, that's the whole the free market model of our GDP. And within that, of course, we've talked about, we have a government, and the government's idea is that there are certain goods and services, public goods, that the market will not provide. The market will not put down nice roads for people to drive on because they can't collect revenue. Maybe a toll system. Some companies operate tollways. But at the end of the day, if there's a bridge or a road or a public park or things that would enhance the community for all, there's no revenue really attached to that. And those are called public goods. So who's going to pay for it? Well, you could have generous donors like the Rockefellers come to town and put up a library for you. But the reality is, long, long ago, we set up a governmental unit with the idea that there would be a democratic election of representatives, and they'd get together in Washington, which is our Congress, our House of Representatives, and our Senate. And, they would pass a bill. They would debate it. And we say, let's put in roads and bridges. And some people would say, no, we like dirt paths, so we don't need a bridge. We have, my cousin runs the ferry across the river. That's good enough. And then there'd be a debate, and then there would be, we would agree as people within this country that our Congress, what they finally pass, we're all going to agree to, whether it's grudgingly or joyfully. And all right, so now they've passed a bill, and we're going to tax this big ball of economic activity, take the money, and then we're going to put it into public good. So in theory, public improvements and public goods enhance the economy so that the trucks can move along paved roads instead of dirt paths, and then cross the river instead of drive somewhere else. And it makes it better. And of course, that all makes the ball get bigger. So that was the governmental theological argument of having a tax and spend system where we can put infrastructure in place and have that infrastructure benefit the society. And of course, that's tax. Take the money out in taxes and spend it. And then, of course, when you build roads and people, that money gets trickled back into the economy. It never leaves the big ball. It just gets reallocated within the big ball to improve the infrastructure of the big ball, so the big ball grows. And then, of course, the Federal Reserve System was created to pump money into the big ball to make it bigger. Or if the ball's getting too crazy, they want to pull money out and shrink it back. And that was the whole idea of the Federal Reserve System having monetary policy that inflates or deflates the big ball. Okay, this is simple stuff. This is back in the 1800s, and they dreamed all this stuff up. What we have today is a very, very different model. And of course, we all know that the federal government does not tax anywhere near what it needs to, tax and spend. It's always and always and always a deficit, at least since, World War II. There's one year, allegedly, when the federal budget wasn't in deficit, and that was amazingly under William Jefferson Clinton's presidency. And even then, if you dig through those numbers, it's sort of a statistical goulash. But at the end of the day, the point is the federal government spends and has spent and will spend and will continue to spend vastly more than it taxes. And of course, that's not necessarily good policy from the perspective of a lot of people, including hard money people like me. You think, you can't just keep spending and spending and spending and spending beyond your tax base and building up this big deficit. And of course, those on the other side, the Keynesian multiplier crowd, will say, oh, that's nothing. Don't worry about that. That's just, we're borrowing it from ourselves. We're taking it out of this pocket. We put it in that pocket. It's not important. We can borrow it to infinity. Well, that theory is being tested today at a very, very tough level. And of course, we have $34 trillion in deficit debt. I talk about this every day. I don't want to run out of time. So we have this great big deficit. And of course, the debt service, the interest on the deficit is approaching $1 trillion, or perhaps just over $1 trillion, depending upon how they're refinancing old debt as it comes due under low interest rates. It's being refinanced at higher rates. And yesterday, I talked about how the Fed is trying to tweak the interest rates to keep that process under control, but the market itself is leaping forward and deciding for itself where, given the risk profile, where the interest rate should be. And of course, the federal government issues its debt, and it's the full faith and credit of the United States government. Those are big words. Those are important words or fancy words. The full faith and credit of the United States government. Well, what that means is that the 330 million Americans who live here, and we pay taxes. Okay, so it really is on the backs of the taxpayers. And as I am pointing out and have pointed out, the deficit itself is grown to the point where it is becoming a thing unto itself with respect to the size of our tax-paying base. And at 330 million citizens and about less than 200 million tax-paying units, which is individuals and corporations and others who pay taxes, but not nonprofits, they don't pay taxes. And you put that, that's a little footnote, you remember that. The point is, we are getting to a point where the debt and the debt service is stretching beyond the reasonable capacity of the taxpaying base to pay it. And we're seeing that in these numbers. So of course, the problem is now we're running these annual deficits of $2 trillion a year, and then they just kicked the can for $1.6 trillion down the road last week into March. And at the end of the day, it becomes apparent that the system is not in balance. And the taxpaying base cannot afford the current debt, which we've built up since World War II. And it's a great big pile of it. Of course, it becomes quite a linear thing where there's a curve that accelerates. The slope of the curve accelerating right now is much steeper slope than it was for the 20 to 30 years after World War II. The point is, it's an increasing problem. It's getting bigger and bigger, and there's no way to shut this off without a dramatic reset. And of course, yesterday I was talking about one dramatic reset, of course, is inflating your way out of the problem that $34 trillion is a big number. And we got to make it look like a small number, which means you have to grow this ball. And first of all, you have to stop the deficit spending, which will not happen. We're $2 trillion out. There's no way to balance and reconcile the $2 trillion back to zero. So this deficit is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. How do you make $34 trillion, soon to be $36 trillion, shrink? And, one way is to trigger massive inflation, which will make the rich silo, they're outside of the gravitational pull of the economy, they're going to do well. The middle class, if you own property and gold and silver and tangibles, art, collectibles, whatever, inflation comes along, you can ride that curve, because we all rode the curve in the 1970s when we had terrible inflation, and those who had property we're pulled right along, and the rising tide floats all boats. From the deck of the boat, the deck of the ship, you don't really notice. I mean, you're just kind of floating up. If you're standing on the shore and the tide's coming in, you notice the boats are going up. And if you don't have a boat and you're standing in the middle of the harbor, you notice that the hulls of the boats are getting farther and farther up over your head, and you're underwater. So the point is, do we go down that inflationary path? And that becomes a big policy issue. And of course, the Federal Reserve, which is allegedly an independent banking thing, has a dual mandate from Congress. Number one, full employment, which I would argue we have pretty much in the United States. Unemployment is not a raging social issue, especially during election year. But we have this problem of the Fed pulls a number, 2%, out of their hat and says, we're going to be at 2% inflation. Well, all of the inflation numbers we're looking at are 3% and 4%. And what it's telling you is that the Federal Reserve, when they meet next week, trying to tweak those numbers, are trying to cool inflation, it may be a losing game. They may be at the bottom of the channel when the tide comes in looking up, because at the end of the day, monetary policy is not able to, in my opinion, able to overcome the $34 trillion, soon to be $36 trillion in debt. And that is a real political problem, because obviously, as the United States continues to play policeman of the world and, you know, the last remaining superpower, the fact is, like, we're broke. I mean, all you have to do is look at the balance sheet. You don't even have to be a sophisticated accountant or analyst. All you need to do is look at the simple balance sheet and realize you can't run $2 trillion a year deficit on top of $34 trillion in debt with interest rates rising and not have a day of reckoning. So the thought I wanted, this is a long intro to where I wanted to get to today. And there's an idea being kicked around that has caught my attention as sort of a hard money guy, because if we did a hard money reset, and that's ultimately what happens. If you get into an inflationary cycle like they had in Germany in the 1920s, and that's the famous inflation where a wheelbarrow full of, Deutschmarks would buy you a loaf of bread, and they were using, you know, money to heat their furnaces and all that. Well, the ultimate reset is a new money, a new unit of currency. And that means that people that are monetized in the old currency or being paid in the old currency get wiped out. And there's always entrepreneurial activity and governmental activity that allows the new currency to enter into the economy rather quickly. And it's a very painful process from the social perspective. If you're in the poor silo or the middle class silo and you haven't protected yourself, a remonetization is brutal. And that happens after the inflationary explosion. Another interesting thought, and this is what I want to get to, and I don't know that I'm advocating this. I'm not. I just want to talk about it because this is the marketplace of ideas. But I've been doing research on this idea that as long as the federal government has delinked from the taxes, the taxes collected, excuse me, then the thinking in this theory, and I'm not sold on this theory, but it's interesting to think about, is that why not eliminate taxes with respect to federal income taxes and just have the Federal Reserve print the money the federal government needs as it's as a result of legislative and, you know, activity, and just create new money, give it to the Congress and let them, or give it to the Treasury Department, and the Treasury Department would spend it on all the stuff they're spending, okay? And the people would be able to earn money and keep their money because they would be delinked from the tax and spend, because tax and spend is broken. So why not just look at a plan that would allow the Federal Reserve to monetize all of the spending authorized by Congress and administered by the Federal Treasury, and just basically print and spend and print and spend, and all that money would blow into the economy. It would be like a stimulus. The money would enter into the economy and stimulate this great ball, but everybody would be able to keep all the money they make, which would be very good for reducing everybody's debt load. And at the end of the day, it would basically be a transparent truth of what they're doing today anyway. And if you strip all of what we're doing today back, what you realize is the Federal Reserve is assisting in the funding of the Federal Treasury's debt issuance. And of course, that's we say we're printing money. Well, the quantitative easing, where they actually step in and buy it, or they facilitate even the Fed's open market activities historically, you know, expanding and contracting the money supply. So I want to leave you with that thought. I mean, this is probably not something we can talk about in 2 minutes, but let's think about that idea and see where it goes, because this is the marketplace of ideas, and that's an idea. Anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. Really appreciate your time. Yeah, give WVW Foundation a call or reach out and help us out. And thank you so much for watching. Have a great afternoon. Bye.